Hey, Hacker Public Radio denizens. I'm a huge fan of HPR, given that I'm into all things Floss, copyleft, and just in general, I'm a geek. And while I don't hack code, I do hack policy in my state legislature and in social media as an electric vehicle evangelist, renewable energy feed-in tariff analyst, podcaster, and vehicle-to-grid V2G advocate. So what you are about to hear is a program that I've been recording for about 3 years now. It's called This Week in Energy, or TWE. It's a podcast that reviews the week's energy news headlines as viewed through the lens of two energy democratizers, which is why I think HPR listeners may find it of interest. I'm based in Reno, Nevada, and my co-host, she's a Danish energy economist who bounces around between Denmark and Germany. But the following isn't an example of our typical show in that we don't talk about the latest energy news headlines. Rather, we invited a solar energy blogger from South Korea to join us, and he asks us, the two TWE co-hosts, to explain what the term energy democracy means. So without further ado, here's a special 30-minute episode of TWE, which explains what energy democracy is, how the movement is hacking the traditional monopoly utility business model, and what the future of energy may look like if the people get engaged in the energy transition, or what is called the Energiewende in Germany. And finally, I'd like to thank the volunteers at Hacker Public Radio for making this venue available to the community. Thanks, guys and gals. Next up, on TWE, This Week in Energy, we have a special edition where solar energy blogger Roger Wilhite, who's based in Korea, interviews TWE co-hosts Kirsten and Bob on the topic of energy democracy. This podcast is sponsored by the kind donations from listeners like you. To sponsor our show, please head on over to www.thisweekinenergy.tv to donate, and we appreciate your kind support. From the high desert of northern Nevada to the temperate woodlands of Berlin, Germany, to temperate coastal Suwon, South Korea, and around the world, welcome to TWE, This Week in Energy, for the week of July 15th, 2013, episode 97, Energy Democracy Defined. And I apologize in advance for the audio quality of this show. Hopefully it'll be back to normal in the next edition. We thank you for your patience. Hey, everybody. Welcome to TWE today. We have a really special show today. We're going to do question and answer format on energy democracy and try and kind of unpack the term because there's so many aspects to it. Joining us today is Roger Wilhite, and he's in Suwon, South Korea. He's an English teacher there for grammar school. He runs a blog at secondsilicon.com, which he brought to our attention, and it's a really good blog. I would go check it out. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Thank you, Bob. Hi, Kirsten. I'm a huge fan, and I think you guys are doing a fantastic job in this space. TWE has been an invaluable source of inspiration for me as a solar energy blogger and a renewable energy advocate. Thank you so much for extending the invitation to appear on your show to ask about energy democracy.
Yeah, and that's what Roger did. He had emailed me and he was asking me if he had gotten the definitions, or he had written a blog post about energy democracy, and he was curious if I had any input on how he had defined it. And I thought, well, since Kirsten and I are going to be taking a couple of weeks off here and we're trying to do some kind of special pre-recorded shows, that we could try and unpack the term with Roger and see how that goes. And then, of course, we have Kirsten. Where are you at today?
Well, I'm still in Berlin, so this doesn't happen so often that we do two shows where I'm in the same place, right? I'm still here.
I'm always like, where are you at today, Kirsten?
But I think this is very interesting that we're really spanning the globe with Korea, the U.S., and Europe today. So, yeah, welcome also here from Berlin to you, Roger. And thank you very much for your interest and your blog post.
No problem.
Yeah, I was really blown away when I was looking at his blog, which is, again, secondsilicon.com. And then I went to see the about page and I said, wow, he's in Korea. How cool is that? But he is an American, and I guess he's heading back to the States in 2014. And you've been in Korea for 9 years.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So how's your experience been there? I mean,
it's been fantastic. I've in the process of living here, I've gotten married and had my first child. So it's been great. Learned a lot about the culture, and it's been a wonderful experience.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, well, why don't we get on with what we're going to do here, and what's going to be kind of, you know, we're going to do this as I often describe to guests that I invite onto TWE, I describe the show as sort of like friends sitting in a coffee shop and just casually discussing the latest energy news headlines, although today we're going to be more of a kind of a panel moderator format, but we still want to be conversational, and I think Roger's many regards probably much more knowledgeable about solar energy than I am, judging by his blog, so I'm sure he's got a lot to say as well. So Roger, why don't you start out by asking, I guess, what the first question will be, and we'll then let Kirsten maybe jump in and answer that, and then I'll see if I have anything to add.
Okay, well, it was on TWE that I first heard the term energy democracy. Mm-hmm. The phrase kind of intrigued me, and I wanted to know more about this. I had no idea. And I did some searching, and I kind of found what I was looking for with a website called the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, yeah. And that URL is ilsr.org. And according to the site, they've been fomenting this vision of democratized energy since 1975. So given the nearly four decades since the inception of this idea, you would think there would be an abundance of material on this topic, but that's just not the case. There's not much information, at least online, on this topic. So that's why I'm here today. I'd like to pick your brains about this idea of energy democracy for me, and hopefully some of your listeners can get a better grasp of it. So could I get a summary of democratized energy from each of you?
Yes. Thanks, Roger, for this question. And yeah, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance are, well, friends of us, even though I, spanning the globe, this is maybe a term that we use for the people who are in the space and some of the few people using this term, just as you're saying, there's not so much of a resource out there. So when I talk about energy democracy and democratizing energy, what I mean is that the ability to take energy back into people's hands. That means that renewable energy it's the first time that we really have the opportunity to take ownership into our own hands as citizens. You know, of fossil fuels, there was no possibility of having your own little nuclear reactor in your garden. but with renewable energy, this is now possible, that the ownership is now back in our hands, and that could be in many formats. It could be literally the solar panel on your roof, but it could also be co-ownership, like in co-owned, cooperatively owned wind turbines or cooperatively owned other renewable energy installations. So it's really about the ownership. And that's what you're also discussing in your blog post, where you're relating the terms energy democracy and discussing the leasing models and the leasing model discussion in the U.S. that's currently going on. And I really think that is the point. And the important thing is also, so this is a structural change. It's not only the technological change, because as you were pointing out as well in your blog, it's perfectly possible to stay with the current centralized energy system and, in quote unquote, just switch the energy source. So democratizing energy is about more than switching to renewables. It's about decentralizing the system. And as you're pointing out also, you could even decentralize the system and still keep ownership in few hands. But it's about decentralizing the system and decentralizing ownership. And I like to compare it to the digital revolution, because these paths are actually so similar. The digital revolution all of a sudden allowed all of us to become content producers without any gatekeepers, just like we're doing it with TWE and you're doing it with your blog. All of a sudden, we're actually all publishers. And this is something that became possible through a technological innovation, but it's up to us to take this chance and use it. And the same is with renewable energy. It's up to us to take this chance and actually democratize energy now.
Great analogy. with the digital revolution. That was a great analogy. That was kind of what I was looking for. Bob?
Yeah, well, to add to what Kirsten was saying, I think John Farrell at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and who, by the way, we should have on, I think, on the July 29th recording. I've got him penciled in.
Great.
So he'll be in on that week, if I can get him to shift his time. But that's another thing. So anyway, he wrote in Energy Self-Reliant States, which is a little report he wrote about 4 years ago now, but in the preface to it, he said the ubiquitous nature of renewable energy argues for a decentralized energy approach, which is clearly, it seems just really not the efficient way to do it, to throw these big solar energy systems out into the middle of our deserts here, in particular in Nevada. Energy democracy is about ownership, and it's about decentralizing something that was formerly centralized, and this has been since the dawn of civilization. I do have a presentation that I give where I actually go clear back to the Epic of Gilgamesh and talk about the cedar forest. And what a lot of people don't realize is even in ancient times, if a group of people were able to control an energy resource, which back then, of course, was forests, they could bring down a kingdom. And it happened. And this is part of what the whole story in the Epic of Gilgamesh is about, where he takes off to go into the cedar forest and claim it from the monster. Of course, they have all these metaphors, but you can move this all the way forward into present time, and it's still the people who control these energy resources that control our civilization. And now that paradigm is breaking down thanks to technology. And this is, much as Kirsten has just related it to the IT revolution, it's very much the same thing that's happening. And it's a huge disruptive thing that's going on in our society around the globe.
Okay. So I'd like to get a little bit more into the technical side of energy democracy. As you know, we have higher efficiencies along with lower prices in solar PV, and that's led to exponential growth in recent years over in solar capacity. The electrical vehicle is getting a lot of attention these days, and people are imagining things like smart grids and microgrids as promising solutions to our energy problems. I'd like to discuss the role these developments take in relation to our topic. And so if I could get you to elaborate a little bit on these and any other technological advancements that help to make energy democracy now feasible.
Well, so the smart grid idea and the entire idea of decentralized units of energy supply that communicate and work as small cells instead of large grid systems. I think that's the next step that we're going to see spread around the world, because right now, I mean, these are still, so to speak, in test phases. You mentioned a city in Korea where they're testing that smart grid idea, smart city idea. But that was the name. Yes, exactly. But the problem that we're having in front of us is that solar energy in particular and wind, so the two large fluctuating renewable energy sources, are eroding their own market prices on the terms that markets, electricity markets, work today. So that's this merit order effect. We don't need to go into detail with that right now, but the fact is that as long as you don't have storage and communication completely combined with the producing source, the marginal cost of producing an extra unit of solar or an extra unit of wind is virtually zero. So they have a clear downward push on electricity prices, which is a really good thing, apart from that they are eroding their own competitiveness, so to speak. The more solar, the more wind you have in the system, the lower the market prices are, the harder it is to get the payback times on a so-called pure market basis. So this could change once we have smart grids would integrate wind and sun with a storage medium. And of course, there are lots of different storage mediums, and electric cars is one option. But what we see as a really cheap storage medium in a country like Denmark is that you can use the district heating system as a storage medium. So what we see is that different energy sectors start to integrate. You have the electricity sector, the heating sector, and the transportation sector, and you can integrate these and use the transportation sector, the electric cars, and the heating sector, hot water, basically, as a storage medium for electricity, and thereby keep the prices more stable on the very fluctuating resources like solar and wind. So I think it's from an economic perspective that smart grids are really interesting, and that the technical development of communication systems for smart grids should go along with, you know, business model innovation. That's like the fancy word, right? Where you actually try to not only trade electricity on the larger power exchanges, but you start developing smaller, localized, regionalized electricity markets.
Okay. Yeah, that was great. That answered a lot of questions. I have to digest that a little bit more. that was great, though. I want to get into the political side of this a little bit because, as an American, I realize there are certain words and phrases that, when heard, they ignite kind of a frenzy of negative emotions to some groups of people, mainly words like subsidy and incentives. But I've never heard anyone on Fox News chastising the word democracy. So can we get back to that for a moment?
Yeah.
Elisa Wood, writing for RealEnergyWriters.com, wrote that renewable technologies like electric vehicles, smart grids, they offer a vision of a less centralized energy system where communities and households can vote in or shape the electrical grid by how they decide to consume energy. And you've touched on this earlier, but I was wondering if you could elaborate on this and kind of explain, like, what are the elements of energy democracy that make it democratic?
Yeah, well, I think it's very good to hear it from you that you're saying, well, it's easy, quote unquote, to bash terms like subsidy or incentive in some parts of the world, but you don't think that this is the case with democracy. We've actually been discussing this, and I've been thinking a lot about this when I, you know, developed the idea of Energy Democracy Magazine. How what connotations does this phrase have, and are they only positive? And I think it's not only about, you know, voting with your pocket, so to speak, which is also an element, but it's really, you know, I mean, democracy in a political sense means that once you have taken a certain path and the majority is voting for that, so to speak, then you have a development rolling, and you cannot have one person or one organization really stopping the entire thing, because if the majority or the democratic system has decided that is the path we take. On the other hand, if you are having power literally in the hands of big companies, then they might from one day to the other decide to change their business model or decide to change their strategy, which is, I mean, totally okay if it's in their ownership. And that's what we're seeing today. And that might also be the risk with a leasing model that you're describing in your blog post, that as long as you don't really have the ownership, you're still vulnerable to other people's decisions. And I think that's the strength of development, where ownership is the key aspect, like we have it here in Germany. So there's more than 1 million solar owners in Germany. Clearly, this is now a political force. So changing incentives sparks a huge debate and is prevalent in media, is something that politicians care about, is a topic for the elections coming up, actually the number one or two topic, along with the euro crisis here in Germany. So democratizing energy means that by having ownership in one way or another on your roof or in a cooperative manner makes it difficult for overnight changes in policy or overnight, you know, taking it away. We saw it in referring back to the edition of Twee that we did with Chelsea Sexton, who was in the film Who Killed the Electric Car, that was a leasing model involved back then in electric car ownership. And all of a sudden, the car producers decided to remove them from the market, and legally they were able to because they're the owners. So I think that's also a democratic element, that with ownership, you're not vulnerable to other people's decisions and are able to continue on a path once you've gained the momentum.
Okay, great. Bob, did you have anything else for that?
That was great. I might just say, well, I love the analogy of the EV1 and how the GM pulled the plug on the technology and how, you know, exactly what Kirsten was referring to. The only thing I might add to it is how these terms can get conflated between Europe and especially the non-Anglophone nations, you know, getting it translated over to the Anglophone, the English-speaking nations, and how the terms subsidy and Democrat and Democratic can get conflated with political aspects. Here in the United States, if you say subsidy, that's strictly referring to taxpayers and a taxpayer subsidization of a whatever technology. But in Europe, it's more loosely defined as just help of whatever form that the government stepped in. They set up a feed-in tariff program, so this is a subsidy, but it doesn't translate well into English, I've seen often. And then, okay. Of course, the term here in the United States, if you say democratic or democracy, that gets conflated with the political party, sadly, and that, of course, you know, makes people choose sides.
Just on the subsidy thing, actually, it was a big debate whether a feed-in tariff is a subsidy or not, and it was quite important to the sector to say it's an incentive and not a subsidy, also from a legal European legal perspective, but that's another story.
So then subsidy in German then does refer once again to taxpayers subsidizing the system or the program.
Yes, so it's state funded, and whereas right. The feed-in tariff is funded via the electricity bill. Yeah, might be that's the difference.
Exactly.
There was one thing I wanted to comment on, Roger, because you described, or you mentioned, the consolidation in the solar energy sector that's taking place right now. And definitely,
yes.
That's something that's really hurting here in Germany, because three effects come at one time. There are cuts in the scheme, the feed-in tariff scheme. Simultaneously, there's overcapacity in global markets, and competition from Asia is coming in and making a downward price push on panels, solar panels. And then, as you're describing, we're kind of reaching a typical time in any technology producing process where consolidation is happening. No matter what industry you see, that's usually what happens after a certain time. And So, however, I think it's important to say that democratization of energy, at least the way I use the term, is not about necessarily a decentralization of the production technology. So certainly when solar emerged, it was, so to speak, a decentralized production of the technology, because they were small producers and they were all over the place. And now there's consolidation taking place, and it's the big manufacturers who are surviving this consolidation phase, or they're becoming big in order to survive the consolidation phase. So again, I think it's important to say that it's the ownership that is decentralized and democratized, but the production of the technology behaves probably like any other technology and goes through the phases of many small producers to larger producers that are internationally competitive as we see it right now.
Okay, and that was great. I had a host of other questions, but I think you've kind of answered a lot of them with your long and detailed and very insightful descriptions. I just have a couple more, though. I'd like to ask whether energy democracy, if it starts getting, you know, it starts reaching critical mass, at least in the U.S., will it breathe a new life into these culture wars? I guess what I want to know is, can energy democracy coexist with the principles of the brand of capitalism that we have today? Or do we have to rethink and reshape the economic system we live in for this to work? Do you understand what I'm trying to get at here?
I think I do, and I think it's actually quite interesting because, well, so reshaping, yes, referring back to what I said about the electricity market, I definitely think we need to do some reshaping there, which would require prices, electricity prices and markets to be smaller in order to reflect local circumstances regarding the sun and wind condition in every hour or even every minute or second if you start having real-time prices. That's one thing, but the general system of capitalism, actually you're not really getting closer to a textbook version of a market, you know, economics first year, than with a renewable energy system where ownership is held by many small owners. You know, the textbook says something about having an almost infinite amount of almost identical producers producing the same good. Actually, that never happens, but it's close to happening when you have, like in Germany, 1 million solar panel owners who produce an identical good, electricity, but they are, and each of them is so small that they cannot, you know, I mean, they don't have any power on the pricing mechanism. So actually, we're getting really close to like a beautiful textbook version of capitalism, which seems maybe ironic to some, especially those who are attacking renewables for being only a, you know, almost like a state aid project. But actually, we're moving towards a market that's much more in lines with, I mean, what does market competition actually mean? Well, it means that you have a lot of owners at producing, and what we have today is actually not a market system. You have very few owners who dominate the market and who can set prices. That's like the monopoly or oligopoly model, and that's how electricity systems work today. There's not much, textbook market or liberal market over that.
All right. Well, you two have painted a very clear and detailed picture of energy democracy. One more thing, Bob. Overall, do you think this is more policy-driven or is it technology-driven?
Well, it's clearly both. We have the technology is on the ground now, so you know, but it has obviously taken many years to get to that point, and of course, that's part of what Hermann Scher's whole thesis was that if we could scale these technologies rapidly by allowing everybody to participate equally, and then I usually caveat that by meaningfully, meaning they get paid to do so, then we can bring down the cost of these technologies quickly. Then, of course, policy comes in because that here in particular in the United States, policy is used often by the industry who has the power in the legislatures because they have the ears of the legislatures. Your average fellow who goes to work every day doesn't have time to go down to the legislature and lobby for energy democracy. So you have the energy companies in there and their captured regulatory bodies or public utility commissions in there all advocating for pretty much the status quo. So if policy doesn't move such that we can use the technology, then we're still having trouble democratizing our energy grids. And of course, this is the compare and contrast between the United States and Germany in particular, is that you've got all the participation there and ownership there, and here you have very little participation and the ownership is still in the hands of the big monopolies and oligopolies, as Kirsten was talking about.
Right. Okay, well, I think that's kind of about do it for me. I think I've had everything that I wanted to know answered. Hopefully this will shed some light for some of your listeners as well. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be here, and I look forward to consuming many more great episodes of TWE.
Thank you very much, Roger. Happy to have you on.
Thank you so much, Roger. It was great that you were willing to come on and do this. You're an excellent moderator, by the way. Maybe you've got you should get a job or apply for a job when you come back to the States with Green Tech Media or something, and you can do some moderation.
Maybe I will. Thank you so much for that.
And in any case, so yeah, this is going to be a short version of TWE today, and we just were hoping to keep it real succinct and get this explanation, a little more granular explanation of what energy democracy is all about. And thanks so much to Roger Wilhite for joining us on this special edition of This Week in Energy. You can find out more about Roger at his website, which is called Second Silicon. Get absorbed in solar at secondsilicon.com. That's all spelled out, secondsilicon.com. I highly recommend the blog. It's an excellent site. And of course, please let us know what you thought of today's show. You can leave us feedback on each of the episodes of TWE at our website at www.thisweekinenergy.tv, or you can email me, Bob, at thisweekinenergy.tv. Or you can email Kirsten at thisweekinenergy.tv. And of course, we'd love to hear your suggestions for future show topics or guests as well. And be sure to tweet us on Twitter at TWE Podcast. That's the at sign followed by TWE Podcast, T-W-I-E Podcast. And of course, we have a Facebook page. Just search for us there. Thank you so much for joining us. My name's Bob Tregellis. Think energy democracy, folks. And goodbye. And Alf Edison.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Share Alike, 3.0 license.